All right, so what we're going to talk about is, one is having sort of the focus of this talk is that really look at how does the private sector work differently maybe than the public sector, what are some of the cultural differences, how people approach work differently, especially with their priorities, rationale and the importance of time management. You know, we hear money and time are everything to the private sector, and there's a lot of truth to that. And consulting practices and relationships. What the presentation is not really going to be about is setting up a business. That's presentations we have done before and we continue to do. And there are a number of us as consultants that are in the room that can.
And I was in practice, though, I confirmed about it.
Some of us that can answer questions about if you're interested in setting up a business, what are some of the resources that you sort of tap into. But this is really more a behind the scenes kind of thing that we want to sort of engage. So, starting off, is it crazy to leave public sector work at this time when the economy is in the tank? No, not necessarily. What we're pointing out is that public agencies now are in the process of doing their layoffs. There's a delayed effect that's going on in this particular economy where they are. Sorry about that. Where they are finally, you know, having their budgets trimmed, and so we're seeing that it's not so safe all of a sudden.
In the private sector, almost no matter what kind of business you're at, if you are a ready-to-go kind of professional, the private sector is interested in you because there is always somebody at every company that's really not pulling their weight. And so when someone comes along with a skill set that is ready to go, then those people are wanted. Sometimes the companies in this kind of economy are looking to bring people along that are sort of that ready to go professional on a part-time basis and sort of see how that works. Other cases, it's just like there's a space right there, but there is a gap there at almost any time in any economy. And the other thing right happening now is that when the economy starts to recover, who is going to be the first entity out there to react to it? And it's going to be the private sector. You're going to find that whether it's the construction industry or the other kind of land development, they're the ones that are going to start the economy back going. And they're going to be going to the engineers, the surveyors, and so on for work. And so we're going to see when the economy recovers, it's going to happen first at the private sector. And so being on that front line is something that we want to be. So I'd like to start off with what I think of as the three R's of soil consulting. One is about your reputation. You have a reputation that you want to protect that it can either be an asset to you or it can be a liability. If you've ever had a project that sort of went sideways, it sometimes takes years and years for that reputation of that particular project to come back and sort of smooth itself out. So companies out in the private sector work very, very hard to protect their you know, long-earned reputation. You want to take your reputation, you want to treat other people's reputation as they would treat yours. For a number of us that have been consulting for years, we have found that a lot of times we have had some very negative experiences where someone out there, maybe in the public sector or in the private sector, really wants to sort of grind us down into the ground. But when you actually get into the private sector in consulting, you really want to both respect other people's reputation and protect your own. Lastly here, let your reputation speak about having made tough and informed decisions. You don't want to have the reputation of the person who reacts first to everything. It is not important to essentially have an instant answer for everything you got. And you want your reputation to be as a problem solver. The second of the three R's is respect. You need in the private sector to respect that somebody else is paying for what you do, and that's going to be both your successes and your failures. Those people that are funding that, whether that is a grant or whether that is a private sector developer or someone that is doing compliance and they have to meet up with certain agency requirements, they are making and taking a risk that you will do what is needed for it. So it's important that you recognize that they're taking that risk. You want to respect others by listening to them first and responding later. The idea that you know everything is be- that's demonstrated by taking in from what is their perspective and then responding to that after you've had that. And that's basic customer service. You want to respect yourself insofar that let your work quality be what you are known for. Respect that you have standards for what the kind of work you do. You know, we are constantly under pressure in the private sector by clients to say, can't you do that for less money in a shorter period of time? And there is, you know, a lot of times opportunities to trim a little here, trim a little there. But the bottom line is, if they're eventually getting you to the point of saying you're not really going to produce the quality work that you actually are proud of, that's a place that you need to really stop and think, am I really disrespecting myself and my quality of work when that happens? Lastly, the three R's is reward. One of the real benefits I feel of the private sector is we've got cradle to grave involved projects. We start off with the project sometimes coming to us as a sheet of paper or a map or something saying, I want to do this. It's almost a blank slate. There's some preconceived notions by those developers and those other folks, but a lot of times we have a huge amount of influence on what happens with that particular project. And there is a lot of reward, you know, in being able to essentially help them in some cases for what I do, you know, helping avoid certain natural resources or minimize their impacts. So that what they leave after they're done with the project is something that's a little bit better than what maybe someone else could have gotten away with. You know, there's a variety of project work that we do, you can be all over the spectrum in the private sector, you know, depending on what your specialty is. And so there's a lot of value that you get variety over the course of a number of years. You really get opportunities in the private sector to solve problems that aren't necessarily getting, you know, fixed somewhere else. And I'm not trying to rag at all on the way government works, but a lot of times in government offices or other things like university institutions, there's little systemic problems that just seem to go on for years and years and years. And I think really one of the nice aspects of going and migrating into the private sector is that you're going to have opportunities to fix problems that other people haven't a bit about. You know, there are lots of opportunities to interact with a broad range of other professionals. You're not simply working with just one group of people. You may be working with engineers, you know, surveyors, scientists, university folks, and so on. There's a nice level of exposure to other disciplines within the private sector. And, you know, what you find in the private sector, because one of the reasons people talk about migrating to the private sector, is money. You know, what do I get paid? Stuff like that. And your regular pay and your bonuses are really going to be a reflection of how you contribute to the bottom line. And I'll explain what the bottom line is in a moment. You hear that money is everything for the private sector. Well, it's not everything, I'll tell you that much, but it is really at the top of the list. In the private sector, you know, the philosophy is that work needs to be completed on budget, whereas in the private sector, the philosophy is a little bit different, which is that the work needs to be completed in a manner that makes money. And so there is a sort of another incentive in there. Also in the consulting field, it's not really always about money, but a business can't operate for very long if you're not making any money in the long term. And that making extra money is part of the reward, but it is also part of the opportunities that a little bit of profit creates. Maybe that allows you to buy some new fuel equipment, maybe that is something that allows you to go to certain conferences and get more in tune with emerging technologies. If you don't have that profit, you end up getting stagnant. So it is really important for any business to have it. That's part of what makes them competitive. So we always talk about the bottom line in the business. And what we mean by that bottom line is, one, you've got to have profit, and you've got to have good cash flow. If you don't have either one of those things, you're not going to be ending up writing those paychecks and writing those bonuses for the rest of the people. So that's probably the number one thing that a business has its focus on. They are also, you know, in the business of trying to solve project issues. They are trying, that is part of what they are marketing, is a certain level of skill in the consulting field. And so the important thing here is that in the consulting field, you want to focus on the problem of a particular project or a particular situation. That's not the same thing as when clients have a problem. Clients bring along a lot of interesting baggage, and you really have to separate what the client's baggage is from what the actual project is going to do. But in the long run, when you're helping them solve their project problems, you're creating the opportunity for repeat business. I've been in business for 20-some years, and I do marketing, but I'll tell you what, most of my business, like something on the order of 80% of it, comes from either repeat clients or from word of mouth. And that comes back to the issues of reputation. That's also, you know, something about how I actually go about solving problems for them. They want to recommend me to somebody else. And that makes it lower cost for me to run a business. If I have to spend only 2 or 3 hours a week doing marketing related stuff, and the other work just sort of comes in almost unsolicited, that frees me up to make more billable hours. You also, for a business, the part of the bottom line is responding to how the market is changing and evolving. If you're still in the business of faxing stuff to clients, it's like, well, wait a second. They're expecting that to be a scan, and that is through email. And my fax machine collects dust. It will become that obsolete. Yet once upon a time, it was one of the most important pieces of office machine I could have. The other thing that companies are going to be doing is protecting what are their assets. And a lot of times that's their reputation, but sometimes that is going to be certain key employees, or that's going to be certain market niches that they happen to be all about. Those are the kinds of things that companies are essentially focusing on. Why isn't employees on that bottom line? Well, one is, you know, employees come and go. You don't necessarily have total control of that particular resource. Another thing is that, you know, employees evolve. And sometimes someone starts out as sort of a dull, not so excited kind of employee, and they turn into just a great workhorse, you know, a year later, or vice versa. You know, people, they change over the course of their employment. So it's a little harder to manage that. But I could very well have put that on there, and you will find that some companies out there, you know, their bottom line is their employees, because if those employees are not satisfied with the work, they're not going to do good work, and if they're not doing good work, they're not going to be addressing those bottom lines. So there is, you know, you can't really separate them entirely. So people always ask, you know, when you're going from the public sector over to the private sector, what am I going to get paid, or what am I going to be billed on? Well, the bottom line is, it's the market that tells you what you're worth. If you have 25 years of experience out there as a sales professional, that kind of person, and if you were like where I'm from Portland, Oregon, that person should be somewhere $80,000, $90,000 easily. And that's what that person should be earning, which means that there's going to have to be a billing rate based on that amount. But the other thing is that what comes into issues of billing rates are what is going to sort of motivate you to be at the best that you can do. And then also, how much can particular projects afford? Not every time I submit a proposal somewhere do I actually have the same billing rate. Sometimes, it's, you know, for certain projects, I need to be more competitive, and I might be less than this particular amount per hour. And other times, it's like, I'm the only game in town on this particular one, and I could have my standard, or I could even have a higher rate in some of those cases. And I definitely have a different rate for certain clients that are real pain in the neck. And you know something? If they keep hiring me back, that means I'm still doing something right for them, and they're okay with that higher rate. But the bottom line is, when it comes down to what the company is trying to do with somebody with your level of experience, is they need to bill you out based on how much they're paying you. And so for example, if you know, what most companies will do is do a multiplier. And very simply, in a very small company that doesn't have a lot of overhead, they're going to take what they pay you, multiply it by 2.5, and that's going to be the amount that they charge. You've got to convert that back to, a per hour rate. But if somebody is paid $50,000 a year, you multiply that by 2.5, get it to an hourly basis, it comes out to about $60 an hour. So if you're expecting to get $100,000 pay at 2.5 multiplier, then, you know, they're going to be billing you out at $120 an hour. And that sounds about right. If you're in an area where it's got a higher cost of living, or you happen to be in a downtown area where they have expensive real estate, nice offices, lots of support staff, all those things that add up to overhead, you might find that that overhead gets up to about 3.5. And that's just going to be depending on the sort of company you have and some of the other kinds of things that factor into their overhead. So obviously time is one of the most important aspects in the consulting field. And it is a commodity that clients are being billed for. When you do a field investigation and analysis and reports, these are simply the product of your professional time. So the issue here that we in the consulting field always have put together here is what I call the Goldilocks paradox, which is if you spend too little time on a project, it's going to come back and haunt you. You know, it may not happen right away, but sooner or later, if you didn't do enough work, it's going to come back. And if you spend too much time on a project, it's going to come back and haunt you and hunt you down, and that's going to be your manager, and that's going to happen right away. So obviously, you know, the issue here is you've got to learn how much time is just right. So I'm going to go through a number of different things about the private sector that sometimes are a little bit different. I definitely don't want to give the impression that I'm beating down on government, because I've done work in government, I've done work in the private sector, and it's just sometimes some differences. And the main thing is that, you know, when somebody comes over from the public sector to the private sector, we want them to succeed. And so the idea here is to really sort of get people adjusted in advance of knowing what some of those expectations are. So for example, in the private sector, you know, your meeting is not ready to be held unless you've got all the background material and all the updates distributed in advance. Those people want to sit down at the meeting, they want to conduct business, they don't want to spend time talking about what everyone's been doing or an update. They want people to read that, come to the meeting, ask questions, and make decisions. Meetings are about participating, not just showing up. They want everybody in those meetings to be doing something that makes that meeting more productive. And you'll find with some really hard-bearing kind of managers, they're going to say, these meetings are half hour. And, you know, because we know that if you have an hour, you're just going to stretch out the discussion. So you might as well just have a half hour meeting. You're going to go through those things really quick, and you'll be on the way to doing other things. And meetings that happen every week generally are a waste of time, because people start to think of them as a break time. And so, unless you have those kind of meetings where people are constantly bringing new information, you're going to find that the private sector doesn't do a lot of recurring kind of meetings. Maybe they do a once a month kind of staff meeting, and those things are going to be very short. Or if they do have a weekly staff meeting, it's a half hour. It's in and out. There's no purpose of sitting people down for an hour and a half to sort of do a rah-rah kind of cheering up kind of session. Because nobody brings anything to the meeting, and one person does all the work to give to everybody else. All right, in terms of work relationships, it really matters to clients that you treat them as individuals and not as a caseload. And they are in the business of providing money, they're expecting service, and being treated as an individual is extremely important to them. When you are talking to them, you need to take a little bit of time out from the business to essentially engage them on a little bit of other stuff. You know, I'm not talking about saying, you know, how was your daughter's play this last weekend, unless you sort of know them that well. But ask them about the weather, ask them about what's happening in their business, but break away from the project discussion for just a moment, because then they're feeling that you recognize them different than just the person that is handing them the work. You need to turn envy and jealousy into humor and intrigue. I had a situation a number of years ago where a client calls me up, you know, and starts talking about, I gotta do this, I gotta do this, and I'm having a really hard time hearing it. And I said, well, where are you? And he says, oh, I'm at the pool with my kids, you know. And I said, oh, well, you understand, you know, he says, yeah, you know, it's okay, I don't mind the interruption, you know, we only come to Hawaii about three times a year. You know, at that point, you're really wanting to just reach out the phone and strangle your client for getting all over me about deadlines and stuff, and he's there having vacation. You know, so, you know, in those kind of situations, you just got to simply turn the situation around, have fun with it, you know, find a reason to sort of joke about the fact that he gets to play while I get to work and all that kind of stuff. It really helps them sort of break down the barriers, and they trust you more and they like you more. And that's really important when it comes down to it. And I would say this in other types of this presentation, but you really have to like your work, and you have to like the clients to the degree that you won't let their frustrations undermine the quality of your work. All right, when it comes to education in the private sector, I think you'll find that private sector companies out there, they really like the idea of continuing education, but they're really not really good about funding. They don't often have very much budget for people to go back to school or to, you know, go to a lot of training and so on. You're going to find that, we'll send you to 1 or 2 days a year for some kind of seminar, and it's probably not very substantive, and it's probably pretty inexpensive. Yeah, you know, it's not sort of their approach to do that. But you will find that a lot of companies are willing to cost share or totally fund continuing education if you do it on your own time. If you say, you know, I can take these classes on Tuesday afternoons, and I'll stay late on Wednesday to sort of make up some of my time. All of a sudden, what they realize is this person's going to have the same amount of billable hours that they did without going through these classes or something like that, and we're going to basically pay for a couple hundred dollars a day or maybe a couple hundred dollars a quarter, and we're going to get a better education for these people. So to them, it's a very small cost, but it's the time away from the office that is the issue that they really focus in on. So they're wanting to essentially, you know, be able to balance that. Also in this whole consulting field, you're going to find that it is expected of the professionals that they do read the academic journals. They go to the internet and look at research papers. They look at industry magazines and understand that stuff, because that's just sort of part of the work. And it's worth your time to do it, and it's worth your effort to essentially do a little bit of name dropping, like, oh yeah, I read in an article last week. You're gonna find that those supervisors and so on, they're very impressed with the fact that you're reading that, because they know that not all the employees do that, but when you do that, it's really giving the positive impression that you're actually willing to invest your time into your career. And that's really one of the big differences between the public sector and the private sector, is that you in the private sector are going to be 95% in charge of how you advance that company. You will not necessarily advance at all in the private sector if you just sort of come to work, do your job, and not really do things that actually advance you both academically, technically, and the company. All right, so things about the daily grind of working. Sometimes you're going to find you have to work 12 hours in that day. And in some cases, you might find that having worked 4 extra hours in one day means that you don't have enough work for the next day. Well, that's just the way it goes. As a colleague mentioned to me, you know, that he had a situation a number of years ago where, you know, he had an employee come back from a job site that was an hour and a half away because it was, you know, he wanted to be back at 5 o'clock. But there was only another hour's worth of work to do at that job site. And it's like, well, you just wasted an hour and another 3.5 hours of drive time just because you wanted to come back on time. Well, that rule of an 8-hour day is not necessarily true in the private sector. And so you know what you have to do. The work you anticipate, I'm not going to be home at 5 o'clock. I'm going to be home when my field work is done or when I no longer can see the color of the soil on my Munsell color book or stuff like that. On rare occasions, you might have to work a little bit on a weekend to meet some kind of deadline, work on a proposal, or go visit a job site. Does that mean that it's happening every weekend? Absolutely not. I think in the private sector, in my office, the people that work for me maybe work part of a Saturday once every 3 months. So it's not a big sacrifice. And a lot of it is about how you schedule your time. You know, if you're doing a lousy job with your projects and your deadlines, yeah, you're going to probably find that there's a crunch moment and you're forcing yourself to come in on a Saturday. Overtime. Well, depending on the kind of company you work for, you'll find that some companies do offer overtime, but a lot of them, there's no such thing as overtime. You're paid by salary, you're paid by a job, and you just have to do it. So you learn to be more efficient when you know you're not getting paid for overtime. But you also will find that if you do have to put in extra effort, the bosses and the supervisors, they're going to recognize that. Sometimes it's going to be a bonus, sometimes it's going to be that it's like, you know, why don't you just take the afternoon off? You've been putting it out. And they're not going to make a big deal about it, because that's one of the nice things about the private sector is the supervisor can say, you've done a great job, you know, go have the rest of the afternoon off or take a 3-day weekend. That's their prerogative. They don't have to worry about whether that seems fair to another person in the office. That kind of structure doesn't exist out there. Sadly, when it comes to vacations, they're not the best things in the private sector. Why not? Because you're going to work extremely hard right before that vacation to get a bunch of deadlines done, sometimes deadlines that were due when you were supposed to be gone, but you got to get them done beforehand. And then you're going to find that when you get back, you're going to probably put in a bunch of extra hours just to get through the workload of stuff that piled up when you're gone. The idea that somehow you get to leave on vacation with a bunch of loose ends and come back and you sort of eventually get caught up, no, that doesn't work. They're expecting you to essentially manage the effects of your vacation. All right, I'm running a little bit slow here on time, but or past that time, but I'm going to go through some more slides a little more quickly. The thing to understand about the private sector is teamwork is about helping out whoever is the weakest element, so that the whole team as a whole can move along faster on budget or even below budget. The other aspect of it is that the level of research that you find in the private sector is going to be related to what the client is willing to pay for and how they're going to benefit from it. And that's a tough one, a tough pill to swallow, because a lot of times what we feel in the soil consulting field is important to have, there is no appreciation for that at the client's level. And sometimes they don't understand that you just want to make sure that the work is substantive enough that you can go out there and say, I know this, this, and this. And so it's a tough decision. They get to decide what the budget is. But in the private sector, you also have the choice of saying, if you're going to cut my budget, then we don't have a work arrangement here. Because they, you know, having them ask you to do substandard work is not only unethical, but it's something that is going to come back and haunt you. A couple things about file management is that I've been to a number of bureaucrats' offices in various kinds of public agencies, and I run across a lot of people that have offices that are just full and full of piles of papers and folders. And in the, you know, for some people, that sounds like I'm being very productive. In the private sector, that's pretty much looked on as really bad management, really bad. You know, they'd rather have you put your files in a bunch of racks, or even better, put them in file cabinets. Why do they want that? Because when you're gone, somebody wants to look at that file, and they need to know exactly where to go. And if there's piles, they're not going to find them. And so that's really important. You know, I have projects that go back 5 or 6 years, so I have 10 folders. Only one of them is in my office. All the others are where the rest of the files are stored. And the protocol the company is going to have, follow that. It's not your choice to how those files are organized. It's their choice, because somebody else is going to pick up your file, and they need to know how they're organized right from the beginning. Electronically, in the private sector, scan everything. Everything. Put everything into the electronic world. And if it's not something that you really need to keep, then recycle it. You know, there are certain pieces of information, like raw data from the field. I'll save that for quite a long time. But the bottom line is, if things are now archived electronically, I, right here from Texas, can go on the internet, go to my server, and I can pick up all my files, and I don't have to have a bunch of stuff to carry around with me. And that, so it really helps being able to have that access to your information. You know, the rest of the stuff is just about, you know, minimizing the clutter of your electronic information. But lastly, you know, when you help build an electronic library at wherever you work, you're going to find that you're helping the company work as a team by putting resources at their fingertips that they might otherwise spend days. I deal a lot with endangered species, and every time we come across something new, we just add it to our library of different types of plants and animals that we have to interact with. And so we don't have to ask around the office, who knows about Franklin's bumblebee? It's like, no, go to our library, and it's there. When clients call, their expectation is, that you're going to have an immediate response, you're going to have a discussion of the alternatives, you're going to talk about what you recommend, and you're going to do that all in that conversation. The idea that a client calls up, gives you the problem, and then you say, well, let me think about it, I'll get back to you. That's not what they're interested in. They want the response then and now. But that doesn't mean you can't end your conversation with, I need to think about this some more. I'm going to give you a call in a day or two and follow up on it. So you've got to follow up if you promise to do that. And it's always a good idea to send some kind of email. You find in the consulting field, clients don't always stay as your best friend. And so you sort of send these little emails to them to simply confirm what they said to you. Because when they come back to you and say, I didn't say that, it's like, well, here's my email. This was from 5 minutes after our conversation. So you're sort of protecting yourself because your client may, or well, probably almost will turn them. When they email you, they want to have a response in 2 days. That's just the bottom line. Letting an email sit there for a week or 2 weeks is simply saying, I don't think you're very important, and that doesn't go well in the long run. You know, emails don't have to be really long, just insightful, and you need to make sure that your emails are being more proactive than reactive. A couple of last things here about email is, one is treat them like you are having a personal conversation with them in terms of it's a two-way kind of stuff. It's confidential. Now, if they want you to copy emails to someone else, give their permission. And the bottom line here is emails get spread around way too fast. And clients need to have that control. Just because you get an email with 20 other people on it doesn't mean you've got permission to reply to all those 20 people. So, you know, I would set your email program to do reply only, not reply all. And lastly is, when you're forwarding other people's emails to the rest of the other people, you are not proving that you're productive. You're just simply proving that you can pass paper, or in this case, electronic information. And that's not going to impress anybody in the private sector that you have that ability to do that. Networking is very essential, you know, but a lot of people sort of don't see the difference between networking and marketing, and there is a difference. If you're going to do marketing as part of your networking kind of process, you want to be subtle, you want to make sure that you're providing them with some kind of information that they can use, and at the same time, you're reaffirming sort of their connection to you. In the long run, if you're in the process of giving them little bits of information, when they have a problem, when they have a question, they'll come to you. And that's what you want. You want to have your reputation be out there as a problem solver, as an information provider. And so those are important aspects of the networking. A couple last slides here. Perfectionists. There's everywhere out that you go, you'll find someone that's a perfectionist. But you find that in the private sector, the employers don't want them. Why don't they want them? Well, one, they slow other people down. Two, they are not financially sustainable in the long run. Three, they end up becoming a center of attention rather than a project. So those kind of people, if you're a perfectionist, it doesn't mean there isn't a place for you in the private sector, but you're probably better off being self-employed and learning to, you know, bid your projects on a lump sum basis, which means that you're saying, on a lump sum, I will do this work for this amount of money. And if I go over that amount of money, I still get paid the first amount, and if I can do it for less, I get a little bonus in there for myself. In the private sector, the reason people get laid off is that they have an unconstructive attitude about their work or coworkers. They don't have enough billable hours. They are unable to assume other responsibilities. When someone is sick and they need somebody to start taking on other project work, they don't want to hear, I'm too busy. It's more like, okay, I have to shuffle my workload and I'll make this work. That's what they want to hear. Or if you've got past projects that are just, you know, going down the tubes. The bottom line here for this is that in a slow time, the best professionals are the ones that big companies hold on to. Your experience, your credentials alone aren't going to hold you on there. A couple of pitfalls you've got to understand about the private sector. One is, if you get into the rut of advocating for your client, where you're actually trying to promote the project as opposed to just deal with the compliance issues or deal with the technical issues, you're going to find that the government folks out there are really going to have a hard time digesting what you give them, even if it's great work. You know, if clients have a habit of having, you know, a tough project and wanting you to do their dirty work, your job as a consultant is to figure out what's the project work and what's their sort of baggage and separate them. If you have an attitude of, I'm the winner that takes all, you're going to probably find that other people in the private sector are going to have a real negative response to that. They, you know, the attitude of, I'm first and I don't really care about you, is one that just rubs a lot of other folks the wrong way. So lastly here is you know, you're not starting over, you're starting new when you're going to, you know, the private sector. They need the specialists out there, but they also want those specialists to have sort of a generalized appeal. It doesn't work in the opposite. They are looking for seasoned people who are trained and already connected. Somebody who's got 30 years of public sector experience is a huge asset. That is something that they can't get very easily. In fact, employees sort of rotate out of companies a lot less than 30 years. So, to wrap things up here, you know, we want you to sort of bring the best you have, the knowledge of what you have worked in terms of regulation procedures, insights on how an agency works, contacts that you might have, things that can possibly bring in new business that they didn't already have, and experience with all varieties of kinds of situations. So ultimately, the private sector has an interest of getting to the end product, and not necessarily as much of the product of getting there. If the opportunity is knocking, then you need to be answering that door. If you're at the end of a career, take a little time, rest, but don't rest too long. Pace yourself, and don't get lost into your current location. The private sector offers a lot of different kinds of places to go. Thank you.